Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, editor of MERS, and today is the start of our year-end best of awards that we give to legislators, political figures, and it is an even number year, guys. So instead of doing freshman of the year, we're going to be doing political figure of the year, House member of the year, senator of the year, and Democrat of the year. Before we launch into it, this is one of two podcasts we're going to do. The second one will be airing, I think we'll put this out later in the week, maybe Friday, Saturday. We could do it on Christmas Eve, Jack, but I don't know how many people are actually going to listen to the MERS podcast on Christmas Eve.
You might be surprised how many people might. You know, they just kick back and relax. They've just got their shopping over.
You're going to say, honey, excuse me, I got to go in the den and listen to the MERS podcast. That's the most important thing on Christmas Eve.
I think that probably happens seldom, so if ever, but you know.
Well, let's remind our listeners about these awards. We've been doing them since 2011. And, John, I was remembering what kind of inspired doing these awards, and it was actually Patty Burkholz.
Patty
Burkholz, back in the 2000s, was extremely effective and very impactful. She took that Water Resources Task Force report that Ken Sikkema put together and got numerous pieces of legislation through on that, whether it was the parks fee or whether it was water withdrawal or it had something to do with the dunes. She was churning out stuff on a regular basis and not necessarily things that Republicans would actually find politically helpful, but it was stuff that she completely believed in and was able to get done. So we decided to have an award that recognized those House members who were particularly effective, those senators who were particularly effective in the last calendar year. And since it is an even number year, we are going to do political figure of the year because it was a political election, a political year. And so with that, we have five nominees for that particular award. And everyone's got a nominee, and we're going to argue them out and see who has the best argument, John. I know you are very excited for your nominee, and so I'll start on the right-hand side and go around. So, right. John, why don't you start?
All right. Well, two of my nominees I picked because they acted independently of their party. They did what they thought was best, and it may not have always been what at the moment would have seemed like the most politically expedient thing to do. And the first one is Political Figure of the Year, and I'm nominating Supreme Court Justice Beth Clement. Because remember way back when she voted to not allow voters, not politicians, challenge to go forward, she was immediately chastised by members of the conservative wing of the Republican Party. There was even some whispers and talk about her not getting the nomination for the Supreme Court coming out of the party convention, which is you know almost always the case that when a governor appoints a member of the court, that they're going to get that governor's party's nomination. She did get the nomination, but she also went on to sort of be a little bit slighted in some of the campaigning activities that went on the part of the Republicans. She was then endorsed by the Michigan Education Association. And in the end, because she did what was right and because she kind of stood her own ground, she wound up being the highest vote getter in that race. And I think for that reason, she's my nominee for Political Figure of the Year. Although I'm sure as a justice, she doesn't like being called a political figure.
Well, if you're on the ballot, you're a political figure. And to emphasize what you're talking about there, John, she got 30% of the vote and was the only Republican nominated person to win on the statewide ballot.
That's right.
Was the top vote getter in 2018 on the Supreme Court ballot with 1.87 million voters. So, Jacob, it's your turn.
Thank you, Kyle. For Political Figure of the Year, I'm going to nominate Governor-elect Gretchen Whitmer. Obviously, she was elected governor, but the way her campaign went is why we're nominating her. What I would say is, that based on the way she campaigned, she basically ran a steady, even-handed campaign, I would say, that pretty much ensured that she was the front runner the entire time. And she was out of the gate in the campaign earlier than pretty much anybody. And that gave her a number of advantages. One of the other things I want to say is that her campaign weathered a number of storms. Obviously, there were reports about the Democrats and unions actively trying to replace her on the ballot. You had a tough primary from her left, from Abdul El-Sayed and Sheree Tanadar. And then you had a campaign from Bill Schuette. And I would say that she had had to face almost all negative attacks from the Attorney General, which is a testament to her lead that she had from the get-go. Again, going back to the steady, even-handed campaign, just very textbook. Did not panic in the midst of the primary. Tanadar was close to basically pretty much tying or being ahead of her for a little bit. She didn't panic, didn't go on TV, you know, immediately. She waited out until when it was time. She raised a ton of money. I mean, you know, you leave Sheree to the side, and she outraised Bill Schuette and everyone else. And so she had the resources to get that message out there. And her message was effective, very simple, focusing on the roads, drinking water, kind of a very appealing to the middle in terms of she talked about getting stuff done. Was something she said a lot. And so she had the message to get out there. It was effective. And she had the resources to do it in terms of running her campaign in a very textbook way, rounded up all the traditional endorsements, got a lot of broad support. And so despite all the storms and questions, the thing that maybe everyone suspected from the get-go happened, and she was elected governor. And so that's why I'm nominating her for political figure of the year.
Well, and Jacob, you take a look at it, and you mentioned all the people that were kind of chased away from this race. There was encouragement to get Dan Kildee into the race. Jeffrey Figer thought about it. Andy Levin thought about it. Mark Bernstein thought about it. Folks wanted Mike Duggan in. And in the end, it was Gretchen Whitmer. She was the one who was able to get the union support. She gradually kind of built that snowball until it got to a point where nobody wanted to stand in front of it, except for a couple of two political neophytes who got rolled into it. So she did run a very effective campaign in that it wasn't necessarily flashy or exciting. But I tell you, she had a catchy phrase and fixed the damn roads. Everyone was talking about it. And with that, she led from the beginning to the end of that campaign and never really got terribly close. Okay, Mike. Your nominee.
My nominee is going to be Katie Fahey, who put together Voters Not Politicians, got the petition drive on the ballot for Proposal 2, and got it passed. And I nominate her because I think 2 years ago had somebody made the prediction that that proposal would be on the ballot and get passed, you'd have probably said no, it couldn't happen. It was a real issue. Redistricting has been a problem since the Constitution was passed back in the 60s. It got tossed out. So she took an issue that was kind of esoteric. And I didn't think that the public understood this issue. Yeah. And they showed that they did. And then to run a petition drive without paid circulators, building a grassroots volunteer army to go circulate those petitions, it was impressive. And then she got it passed. And that was very impressive. The other thing that you have to keep in mind is this changes the way the game is played in Michigan. It has a lasting impact. Proposal 2 has a lasting impact. So my nominee is Katie Fahey.
You know, you take a look at this Voters Not Politicians drive that she spearheaded, something that hadn't been done since the 70s and the bottle bill, where you had a complete grassroots effort. It wasn't until the end where you saw this, you know, the quote-unquote dark money come in and help push it over the top. But all those circulators were volunteers, and we saw them everywhere, and we talked about it on this podcast many times. To tap into something that generated that kind of excitement carried over into, I think, this Democratic wave. I mean, you can debate how big of a wave it is, but it contributed to the wave. And Katie Fahey played a big role in that.
And what's amazing about it, too, is as you're out in the public and you're talking to people, this is the topic that was brought up to me most by sort of non-inside-the-beltway political types, is this proposal. People were interested in it from the very beginning. They were engaged with it, really wanted to see it pass.
She made gerrymandering a household word, Jacob.
Yeah. To emphasize Katie Fahey's role in the redistricting, I mean, the way that the proposal was crafted went through, they did all these town halls before they even wrote the language. They wrote the language, and the language was rock solid. Survived the legal challenge. You think that there were some things that you could throw something at, and they went all the way to Supreme Court and won. And they survived some, a late attack from the Michigan Freedom Fund and the DeVos family to get, again, like what Mike said, a very complicated issue to down to a few sentences where people would vote yes rather than I don't understand and I'm going to vote no.
All right, Jack, we're going to move on to your nominee.
My nominee is Dana Nessel, starting from an underdog position, really, to even get the nomination for Attorney General, representing the progressive branch of the Democratic Party. What we're watching right now, in my opinion, in the lame duck session, you would have this kind of lame duck session with all kinds of activities when the parties are changing over in terms of the new governor, regardless. But I think extreme examples and the what they're really dealing with in terms of the what the Republicans are facing. I think ever since the election, they've started to have more and more nightmares about Dana Nessel as the next attorney general. And I think that's absolutely making waves across everything. I think they're starting to think, what, my goodness, what's she going to do when we pass something? What's she going to defend? What's she going to battle? And I just think that she's actually, in some ways, maybe sucking up half the oxygen in the room right now.
Well, definitely, Jack, if you talk about the tunnel legislation that was just signed into law and this Verhulen bill that would give the legislature automatic legal standing, there's no question that those bills are a direct result to Dana Nessel being elected. I'd also like to go back to the fact that she ginned up the progressive movement and got them excited about the Democratic ticket. Her ability to go across the state and get them to that convention, that endorsement convention in April, was really outstanding. That was a packed, enthusiastic crowd that supported her. And if the progressives needed a reason to go out and really love and embrace that ticket, it was because of Dana Nessel. They were talking about the very issues they were excited about. You know, they didn't get Abdul El-Sayed or Sri Tanadar as the nominee, but they had Dana Nessel, by golly. And she was going to be the reason they got out to vote. And I don't know how much that contributed to the Democrats' success, but I think it contributed just a little bit.
I return again to her underdog status in a lot of ways, because we all know here in the Beltway, a lot of the Democrats thought that was where their victories were going to end. They were going to go down the ticket. Whitmer was probably the favorite to win. Jocelyn Benson was probably the favorite to win, but well, when they get to Nessel, she's going to have these warts, she's going to have these problems, and that's basically where the Republicans will start getting a statewide victory. And it just flat out never happened. I think the whole picture of what we're looking for as far as where Michigan's going to go from here in terms of politics, I just think that she's going to be a major player in what we're going to be writing about in the future.
And I think she also made the legalization of marijuana pretty much a household support for Democrats across the board. Patrick Miles stumbling on whether he supported legalization of marijuana hurt him, but it also kind of just proved for just Democrats that that's where they were. And she was the public face of, yeah, legalizing pot. Obviously, Gretchen Whitmer ended up supporting it, but she was not out in front of it like Dana Nessel was. And obviously, with pot passing this year, I think Dana Nessel was pretty much the face, if you had to find one, on that Democratic ticket. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and give my nominee. And this one is going to be a little different than what we've done in the past. But I'm going to nominate suburban Detroit female voters. And I know we've got a lot of caveats there, but this is the reason why I'm going this way. You take a look at where the Democrats made pickups in the legislature, in Congress, and it was in Southeast Michigan, Western Wayne County and Oakland in particular. Haley Stevens, Alyssa Slotkin, Dana Polhanke, Rosemary Bayer, Mallory McMorrow, Lori Pahotsky, Matt Kolazar, Mari Manoogian, Padma Kupa. Would those people have won had it not been for this strong pink wave, this strong suburban Detroit female voters who had it with Trump, who were going to go and make their voices heard, and they were going to go vote Democratic down the line? I don't think so. All of those positions that I just named had been held by Republicans, and now they are not, starting in 2018. This is where Democrats made their great strides, were in suburban Detroit and among female voters. These women came out and spoke. They didn't like what was happening. They took action, and they made their voices heard on Election Day. My hat's off to them. I don't wear a pink hat myself, but if I had one, I would tip my cap to them, because they got these women into office. And that was pretty amazing. So, suburban Detroit female voters, you are my nominee for Political Figure of the Year. Okay, so we've had a very thorough discussion, as we always have here at the MERS World Headquarters, on the eventual winner here for Political Figure of the Year. We did all agree, though, on Gretchen Whitmer as the political figure of the year for a few reasons, not just because she won the highest office in the state of Michigan, but it was because she was the leader from the beginning to the end. She ran mostly a positive campaign. She smoked her opponents in the primary. She never let Schuette really get within striking distance in the general election. She was very good in the debates. She made very few, if any, mistakes. Basically, made it look easy, and that's hard to do in politics. But she didn't make any screw-ups. She made this race, which would seem to be very difficult, very easy, and raised the state's national profile in the process, and was really kind of the encapsulation also of what we saw across the state, in that we had a strong female ticket. And Jack and Jacob, you guys just mentioned that all our nominees were women. I guess I didn't even realize that until after we got through nominating everyone, but she's kind of the embodiment of what this year was in 2018.
I think she's getting the Political Figure of the Year award for the way the campaign went, which I would term as smart, measured, and definitely not reactionary, which is what we see from a lot of folks, especially those who are behind, just kind of reacting to every little thing that comes up. She didn't get really baited into that. She kind of just stuck to the plan, and it paid off.
You could argue that she's the winner because she didn't make mistakes. She didn't make the kind of mistakes that we've seen over the years. And you can say, look, she just took what just simply made sense to do. She basically handed her top issue with the roads. And her opponent just had all kinds of problems getting in after his primary, everything else, the whole way he ran the race. You can argue all kinds of things about, well, she just had all these things going for her, but we've watched politics long enough to know that a whole lot of people don't do that. They're not a whole lot of people in politics don't take advantage of the obvious opportunities they have, and she just clicked right along. It was like there was, you know, she was just in a motorboat zipping across the lake, and nobody could catch her.
So for that, Gretchen Whitmer, congratulations on the MERS Political Figure of the Year. We're going to move on now to the House Member of the Year. We've got five nominees for that. And John, since again you are on my right, you get the distinction of giving us our first nominee.
I'm going to nominate this year for House Member of the Year, Representative Clint Kesto. And the reason is, just like my nominee for Political Figure of the Year, he acted kind of independent of politics. If you recall when the whole Larry Nassar scandal broke, and we kind of heard the awful testimony that came out of the sentencing hearings, there was a big movement in the Senate to quickly move some legislation that was being advanced by some of the survivors. And there was a lot of urgency, political urgency, to listen to the survivors, and for good reason. But there was also some proposals that came flying out of the Senate with a great deal of velocity, political velocity and speed. And some even argued the Senate wasn't really acting in a very deliberative fashion when they did that. Clint Kesto, as chair of the Law and Justice Committee, kind of slowed that down. He tapped the brakes a little bit, kind of, in this case, turned the House into the deliberative body, when it came to this package. So for that reason, Clint Kesto, chair of the Law and Justice Committee, is my House Member of the Year.
You know, you think about all the time that he spent in the spring on that package, John, and he was running the congressional campaign at the same time. It would have been very easy for him to just rubber stamp those bills and just use that for the political expediency of getting that congressional nomination, and he did not. Mike, you were sitting in those committee meetings. It was hours and hours and hours of hearings on 20-some bills, and he didn't need to do that, but he did.
The committee found a number of concerns and flaws in the bills, and they really discussed it in depth. It showed that he was trying very hard to get good policy out of those bills, a measured and balanced package, and I think he improved them markedly.
So Clint Kesto is John's nominee for House Member of the Year. Jacob, your turn.
So for House Member of the Year, my nominee is going to be Speaker Pro Tem Lee Chatfield for these reasons. One, he buttoned up the leadership race very early. I don't know how early, maybe Kyle will remember.
But 2017.
With little to no fanfare. And I think this is important because when this gets out in the public and it can be a distraction, you have members kind of putting their money and their support one way or the other. It can kind of divide the caucus. Whatever he did, or we'll never know what kind of contention there was. All we know is that Lee Chatfield was going to be the House Republican leader in the next session. The next point, and this cannot be understated, but as the campaign chair, Chatfield was part of an effort to keep control of the House in Republican hands in a year where, after the primary, everyone was pretty much saying that Democrats were likely going to take control of the House. Maybe the Senate, but probably the House. That didn't happen, and they made it happen. Representative Chatfield is also Speaker Leonard's point person on kind of getting all of the controversial and important stuff. That's a tough task. You have to run an orderly meeting, especially we've seen this in lame duck, where he's had to try to get things through. He was in charge of getting Line 5 bill through, paid sick leave, minimum wage through, the Verhulen anytime, any suit legislature bill. So you have that. He also had a public act on driver responsibility fees. And so he was a big part of that as well. We haven't seen this go to the governor's desk yet or pass, but he also was leading efforts on a Line 5 related package, making it a crime to drop anchor in the Straits. So that's a big issue for his district. And so for all this activity and impact, I would nominate Speaker Pro Tem Lee Chatfield.
Just another thing on Lee Chatfield, too. He was also the House lead on the contentious Medicaid work requirements package, helped steer that through the House. And clearly that was pretty controversial. You can say that was greased, but he was willing to take that issue, get that through the House and get that to the governor's office. So I would agree, a great nomination. Mike, who are you nominating?
I'm going to nominate Representative Peter Lucido. He is a very active member of the House. He's introduced 132 bills this session. He's got 17 public acts to his credit in the last 2 years. He takes up issues that are serious and important. He uses his background as an attorney to identify issues that need to be straightened out. He sees little flaws in the legal system that he can address and fix. And so one of his big issues is civil asset forfeiture. Now, that has not yet been passed and sent off to the governor, but he's still working on it. He's pushing at it. He's making a debate, an issue of it, so that people are discussing it and there's an alternative package of reforms that might get passed, but at least Representative Lucido is right in the heart of that discussion. He sponsored the bill to expunge your record, take all information about you out of the system if you're acquitted. And that wasn't happening before, and it takes an attorney to know that. So I'm nominating Pete Lucido.
You know, a couple other things about Pete Lucido is that he's also the lead behind this legislation to increase the age in which you can be charged as an adult from 17 to 18. That isn't necessarily a typical law and order Republican type piece of legislation, but that's extremely important to him to get us kind of on that national level on where we should be charging juveniles as an adult. So he'd like to raise that age. At least he's got that subject on the table. I don't expect that to go until the next session. And he's also made the pension tax, which is referred to as the pension tax, but the elimination of the income tax exemption on pension income, a populist issue that I think the Republicans will find common ground with on Gretchen Whitmer going into the 2019-20 session. I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the first items they take up, because it's an issue that they can both agree on and can change together. So Pete Lucido, another great nominee for House Member of the Year. Jack.
I mostly spend my time in the Senate, and so the House side is kind of an interesting thing to stop and think about for what I've been doing. But the name that I've heard so much from the Senate side is Laura Cox, and we're talking about nominating somebody who lost their election, if you'll recall, in November. But her name was coming up a lot over there because of her involvement with things like the school safety package, which went through her committee, and her activity, very much activity, on the budget, and the governor once again being able to get his budget done, so to speak, on time. We'll wait and see if that continues or not into the years coming ahead. So then for someone who then lost her election in November, we're now talking about her. When we talk about her, we're probably talking about the next Michigan Republican Party chair. So I think Laura Cox is a name that very much has to be considered.
Talk about her work also on the school safety package that happened at the very beginning of the year. And she also had a piece of the NASA response legislation. She's been involved in some of the key packages that have gone through the House this year. And the work on the budget can't be understated as far as helping get that through the process, get that signed into law. And she's got a huge part in this supplemental that's being crafted right now, and making sure that that represents the interests of everybody in the House and the Senate, the governor's office, just been very influential in that. So Laura Cox, your nominee for House Member of the Year. My nominee is going to be Brant Eyden, the chair of the Regulatory Reform Committee in the House. It, maybe I'm partial on this because I'd really love to see a sports book open up there in Detroit. But you take a look at all the gaming stuff that he's had going on, whether it's the fantasy gaming package, internet gaming, doing anything with the horse racing industry and getting video simulcasting on your smartphones. And he's been involved in it. And it looks like something may actually happen in the Senate on this, kind of a grand bargain, if you will. And presuming that does happen, Brant Eyden was right in the middle of it and making sure that that happened. He won the most competitive House district, I think, in the state, in the 61st district. Most of the polls showed him down, and he was able to claw his way back in and win that very contentious race. And all the while, also passing some legislation, such as a piece of the Larry Nassar bills that the House was working on. And for all his good work, Lee Chatfield had enough confidence in him to name him the next Ways and Means Committee chair, a committee that didn't even exist until Lee just created it. And from everything that I've heard, is going to be an extremely powerful policy committee and kind of the go-to committee going into the 2019-20 session, making him a very influential member going into the 2019-20 session. So for that, I'm going to nominate Brant Eyden as the House Member of the Year. All right, so after more discussion over here at MERS World Headquarters, we have agreed that we are going to go with John's nomination of Clint Kesto as the House Member of the Year. When you look at the deliberative fashion in which Clint Kesto, as chair of the House Law and Justice Committee, handled himself, it really is striking the number of hours that we made Mike sit through those committee hearings day after day after day. The product that they came out with, too, was extremely well thought, and really kind of the reason why we created this award in the first place was to acknowledge people who are impactful, active, and effective. And in putting together that package that has now since been pared down in the Senate but has been passed and has come back to the House and presumably be sent to the governor, Clint Kesto played the major role in that. He and Kim Lasada, at the very beginning of the Larry Nassar fallout at the beginning of the year, created that task force and came up with the legislation after looking at the report and taking input from many different House members. So for navigating and traffic copying that legislation, we're going to name Clint Kesto our House Member of the Year. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Next week, we're going to do the Senator of the Year and the Democrat of the Year. Jacob, I just noticed that the sign is back out in the front yard.
My only question is, what does this mean for tenants Francis and Finn Malin? I mean, they've been upstairs and starting to make me think that the management wants them out of the building.
Yeah, the sign for... for rent is back out there, which means the rooms right above our head, Mike, are for rent, and Finn and Francis have made themselves at home up there.
They have. I don't know if they have other office space. They may end up back in the basement, I think.
They could be back in the basement. Francis prefers the garage, but Finn has worked a little workstation down there in the crypt down here in the basement, which... kind of freaks me out to go down there, but he kind of likes it. He's even got the broom down there. He broomed some space out.
At least it's heated. I don't think the garage will be a very popular space over the winter.
No, I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. It gets a little chilly down there. But we'll see what happens.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully you mentioning that we our building has a crypt doesn't scare away any...
No, any strange noises I've heard in this building are from up, not down.
Oh, that's even better for us.
And they only happen at real late night, so don't worry about it. If you're interested in renting space up here, you can call John on that. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.
No phone, no boo, no pets. I ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8 for 12.